Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sanghaṃ namassāmi. So this is the third talk in the 2009 Range Retreat. And to be honest with you, I didn't really feel like giving a talk this evening. I don't want to give a talk. But that's our life. Sometimes you don't want to do things, but you have to do things. And when you go against your wants, your likes and dislikes, that sometimes that gives you a sense of strength. A strength and a sense of freedom. In other words, being free from the power of this wanting and not wanting. So just my life, you just have to do what you have to do. But it reminded me of just the power of wanting and the problem of wanting, and just how that unless we are mindful of that and we learn to understand it and transcend it, overcome it, let it go, that we'll always be like a prisoner of our craving, a prisoner of our will, a prisoner of our desires. And because that craving, desire, wanting was such an important part of the problem of suffering, that's why the Buddha pointed out to it that, blinded by delusion, sort of fettered, tied down, imprisoned, if you like, by craving, that we wander from life to life, even not from life to life, from day to day, just experience sometimes pleasure, sometimes pain, but still there's no real fulfillment or meaning in our life when we're under the power of craving, or in this particular case, wanting. And I know that for a long time, in the middle years of my monastic life, as actually the time when I was certainly wandering around from place to place in Thailand, now one of the meditations which I would do, in fact, was probably the type of meditation I would do even more often than the breath meditation, was the meditation just of no desire. I'd sit down there, wherever I happened to be, in a cave, in a forest, or in a monastery even, and just sit down there and just close my eyes, get my body comfortable, and then just look and be mindful of any desire which would come up in my mind. The desire to get up, the desire to sit down, the desire to think about this, the desire to go and plan that. And every time which I noticed a desire, I'd literally bonk it on the head and stop it, so it would never gain a foothold in my mind. So I spent sort of many very peaceful hours just being free of desire. And that was a very lovely little meditation to do, because for the time when I was sitting down there, it didn't need to have any desires. It's true that sometimes you have to follow those desires. They say that if you didn't desire to come to the talk tonight, you'd still be in your hut. So there are times when you have to follow those desires, but remember, these are desires which are more like duties, because I'm sure that many of you would have thought, no, it's a bit cold tonight, or my meditation's going good, or I'm tired tonight, I don't want to go to the talk tonight, but we have to. So those are more like duties rather than desires. So we do our duties in life, and please make a distinction between your duties and your desires. But these desires which, you know, we have in our monastic life, not only do they just pull us around and stop us having any stillness, but they also stop us having any happiness as well. There was a phrase which I heard on one of these conferences I went to in the last 12 months, and it sort of struck me as a very wise saying. And that wise saying was that, you know, whenever this was actually to do with lay people, every time you want more money, it means you can't enjoy what you already have. And I thought, just how true that is, just in a lay life. You know, people have enough money, but when they want more, it means they can't just rest and enjoy what they already have. They've got to go around working, seeking, trying to get some more. And it's not just obviously money, whatever you want, whenever you want any more, not just money, whenever you want anything more, it stops us enjoying what we already have. And that's one of the problems of life, always wanting more. Whether it's more food, more huts, more knowledge, more peace, more nimittas, more insights. Whenever we want something more, it always means we can't enjoy what we already have. And that's really what wanting is, wanting something more, something extra. And that was such a lovely way of saying it, that sometimes you want more jhanas, or you want more insight, or you want more time with the breath, or whatever it is. Whenever you want something more, it means you can't enjoy what you've already had, what you've already got, what you've built up already. And because that lack of enjoyment, it means we don't have the happiness, that joy which eventually leads to the piti sukha, which develops the deep meditations and the path to enlightenment. So there comes a time when we realize what the problem truly is. It's not that we need more effort, we need more contentment. More contentment, which just said, this is good enough. My hut, my food, my bowl, my monastery, my retreat center, my life. So what more do I want? In fact, wanting more, all you're really wanting is more dukkha, more suffering, more problems, more difficulties. So instead, you can practice this wonderful little technique of just, this is good enough. Or rather, no desire, no desire, no desire, no desire. And when one practices like that, straight away, obviously some dullness will come first of all. And remember this, I've said this many times, don't be afraid of dullness. All the dullness is a result of old karma. You've been working hard, you've been thinking, striving, moving backwards and forwards, and of course whenever your body moves you get physical tiredness, whenever your mind moves you get mental tiredness. That's just the nature of it. Nothing to do with you, it's just cause and effect. When you understand how nature works, you realize it's not some fault in you, it's just the law of the world, the law of the body, the law of the mind. So if you have this no desire, no desire, no desire, no desire for the period of your meditation, it means you will have that tiredness first of all, a result of old karma. But because you're not doing anything, because there's no desire, because there is a resting there, there is a stillness there. And you all heard me say before, because of the resting, because of the stillness, that you regenerate your energies. Just like the batteries fill up with juice, and the tiredness, the dullness disappears. So when you do practice this no desire, be ready to accept the dullness which comes first of all, but just keep going. Don't sort of try and get rid of the dullness because that's more desire, or don't get bored and think it should be something better. To do a no desire practice, you also have to be patient. The wonderful Kantiparamita Potitika, the patience is the highest spiritual practice. And sometimes because of impatience, we want something, we desire something. So you can see that patience is another way of saying no desire. We just allow the whole process to develop. And by having no desire, no desire, no desire, and making that an important practice in our meditation, it means we're not interfering with the natural progress of the meditative mind. We know what happens, yeah, it's dull first of all, but because we're patient, because we're having no desire, we're not interfering with the process, we're being like the gardener, just looking after the tree, just making sure it's protected, there's enough water in the ground, there's enough nutriment in there, all it needs to do is be protected. And that's all that we do, we protect our mind from ourselves interfering with it, with this almost mantra of no desire, no desire, no desire. And what happens is eventually the mind wakes up, the mind becomes bright, the mind becomes incredibly bright, the meditation starts to happen. And also, as the meditation becomes deeper, more blissful, more joyful, you also understand the great insight. Look, this is what the Buddha said, you abandon desire and you get closer and closer to enlightenment, to nirvana. And so you've just been practicing, experimenting to see if what the Buddha said actually works. But also, because you're not wanting anything more, it gives you the chance to enjoy what you already have. And this is one of the main parts of this teaching today. But why is it that sometimes people don't have joy? Joy in their meditation, joy in their life, joy in being a monk or being a novice, being an anagarika. And you find it's always because they want something more. Always thinking that go to the next monastery, go to the next experience, go to the next teacher. You know, if you leave the monastery, go to the next job, the next girlfriend, boyfriend, the next country, the next whatever, and think that then I'll be happy. And it's always wanting more, wanting something different. And because of that desire, that actually stops you enjoying things. So, you're in this monastery, you're stuck here for 3 months, you all made that resolution, at least the ones who are resident here. You made the resolution, for 3 months we'll stay in this monastery, so you're stuck here. So you might as well enjoy it. And how do you enjoy it? By not wanting to be anywhere else. To be happy to be where you are. To have no desire. Sure, it's not the best place, but it's certainly good enough. In fact, you know, maybe I'm saying this because I'm the abbot, so obviously, you know, that your name is attached to this monastery, but it is a very good monastery. It's a peaceful monastery, incredibly well supported with food and other requisites. So, I mean, what more do you want? Okay, you may start sitting in your hut and thinking, what more could we want? Heaters in my room. What more do you want? Now let's make it aircon so that, you know, in the summertime it's cool. What more can you want? Room service. All the monks of 5 reigns or more have a bell to the Anagarika's dormitory, and you can call them any time of day or night for some more tea, coffee or whatever else. It's amazing just how you can fantasize what more you can have. There's a story I remember, I think it was actually Jack Cornfield told me this, when he came to visit Thailand many, many years ago, because they just started their retreat center, IMS. And they had lots of money, so they made this a really good retreat center, and they still had some money left. And so they're wondering, how can we improve our retreat center, make it even better than it was? And it was at that time just, you know, probably the best retreat center almost in the world. It's very comfortable, very nice. So they decided, great mistakes, to put a complaints box. That's why we haven't got a complaints box in this monastery, because you know what happened next? It was so good, this retreat center, that all the people just put in their complaints. And they were surprised how many complaints they had. Because it's the nature of the human being, the closer you get to perfection, the more complaints you have. If that was just a rubbishy old retreat center, you know, just where people were staying in dormitories and it was cold, the floor was hard, the food was really tough, people don't complain so much. You ever notice the closer you get to perfection, just the more you want? It's almost, you're so close, just please give me that last little bit. Now that's a very good tendency of the mind to notice. To notice that the better we make this monastery, just the more demanding we can become if we're not smart. So instead of noticing that, this is good enough. And especially some of you who've been here for many years, you've worked so hard to make this monastery the way it is. And during the range, during the outside the range retreat, you worked so hard to build the huts, put in roads, and make it all just so nice. Now you deserve to rest and enjoy this monastery. Not to want it to be different, but to actually to enjoy and say, if I'm going to enjoy this, and if I want something more, want it to be different, I can't enjoy what I already have. And that's such an important thing for each one of us to practice, this beautiful contentment. It's a realization that what we have already is more than good enough. I remember to the lay people I used to tell this story, you know, using sort of a metaphor which is just, you know, a well-worn metaphor, but you know, it makes sense to people, of life being a journey. And in your journey, some people, they never rest at all. They're always going on to the next thing. As soon as you've got one thing, you always want something more. Always on the move, always walking, never resting or stopping at all in your life. You know what that might have been for you? you're studying, you get one certificate, you get another certificate. When you leave school, you've got to go on and get a job and then go and get some more money. And it's always something more you have to do. And even when you have holidays, there's always things to be done. Years ago, someone showed me the program for Club Med. These are supposed to be holidays, and I could not believe just how many things you have to do if you go on a holiday to Club Med. There's always activities throughout the whole day. People just don't know how to stop. And seeing that, you realize just how people don't have any fun, they don't have any joy. Well, it's always just going on to something else, to something more. But I gave this simile that if life is like a journey and you've always been moving, you've got to find some place to stop, some place to sit down. And it's like you're on this journey, you come to this very cold, rough stone bench. It's not the nicest place to sit down, but at least it's some place to sit down. It's cold, it's hard, and it's uneven. But it's good enough to sit down. And this is important in life. This isn't the best. It could be better. There's always improvements can be made to your heart, to your conduct, to your mind, to your monastery. Always improvements which I could make, but that's not the point. This moment is good enough. So you say, no desire, no desire, no desire. This is good enough. And that stops you. And it stops you in this moment with your mind, with your body, with your experience, with cold or hot, whatever it is. It stops you right in this moment. No desire means you're facing this moment. You're sitting down on it, as it were, on this cold, stone, uneven bench. But a strange thing happens. When you have this no desire, and you stop moving on to the next experience or the next moment, when you stop, it's as if you're sitting on that cold bench and how long can I endure this moment? It's unpleasant, it's not satisfying. That's what it's like sometimes when you sit in your hut and all these hours of meditation which you have to do because there's nothing much else to do, or walking meditation in the cold or you're tired. Sometimes you think, gee, this is a very, very tough place to sort of hang out in this present moment, like a cold stone uneven bench. But something happens if you continue to maintain that patience, that no desire, that contentment, this is good enough. Because what happens, the stone bench underneath your bottom starts to feel softer and even and more warm. You do warm it up by your own body heat. The longer you stay in this present moment, the longer you stay with contentment, with no desire, not trying to go somewhere, the more this experience of now does change. It does become more pleasant, more joyful, and more easy to stay with. It's just that first few moments, or first few minutes sometimes, which is a tough one. So whenever you are practicing meditation, whenever you are walking or sitting or even lying down meditating, please remember just the no desire. And to understand that when you begin, it will be unpleasant, uncomfortable, it won't be nice, because that's the nature of things. But just have this no desire with the unpleasant, with the imperfect. And you'll find the unpleasant, the imperfect will start to mutate. The bench becomes softer. And you're just doing there, no desire, no desire, no desire. You don't want things to happen. And just that bench where you're sitting becomes the softest divan, just so soft, comfortable, smooth and warm. Then you think, wow, I can sit here for hours, and you do. The joy and the pleasure of stillness start to arise. Because that's what happens when one practices no desire, contentment, not sort of allowing the mind to go places, in other words, you know, suppressing the restless mind by just being at peace with this moment, no desire, no desire, no desire, you'll find that the joy starts to arise. And that joy, when it starts to arise, that's the most important part of the meditation. Because once the joy starts to arise, once the meditation starts to be enjoyable, because there's joy there, then you're away. Meditating half an hour, hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever, having a great time. Why? It's because you've understood where joy comes from. Joy comes from the absence of desire, from letting it go. That's why that from, you know, 2 or 3 years, that was my main meditation object when I was a young monk. Sitting down there, wherever I was, just no desire, no desire. Not trying to watch the breath, not trying to get jhanas, just no desire. And seeing all this peace and this stillness and this energy and this joy just come up naturally. And of course that sort of really influenced the way I practice my meditation, the way I live my life and the way I teach. So this is what you can try. And this is also important for those of you who are meditating, when you're meditating on the breath or you're doing some noting meditation or whatever you're doing. If the joy isn't coming up yet, in other words, you're meditating, yeah, you're sort of peaceful, but there's no sort of oomph in it, there's no sort of feeling of a thrill in the mind of the piti sukha arising. It's probably because you're wanting something. You're trying to get somewhere. And that is one of the reasons why the joy doesn't arise. So that if you're getting to, in your meditation, it's just dull, it's boring, it's just, yeah, it's sort of peaceful, but yeah, so what? Try to do a few minutes of no desire meditation. You can just say that to yourself, just no desire. No desire, no desire. Again, don't keep on saying it to yourself. Remember the simile of the taxi driver a few weeks ago. If you keep repeating that, the mind sort of gets really fed up with you. Look, I've heard you. Shut up and I'll practice no desire. So once you get the feel of no desire, the no desire is just the instructions to the mind, and the mind understands what those instructions are, and it exercises those instructions. It just sits there, whatever's happening, it's not going to allow this movement, this force, which stops you being where you are, and pushes the attention to somewhere else, some other place. And instead you're right here. And you remember that, yeah, it will be uncomfortable first of all, but just stay with that stone bench. It soon turns into a sofa. Stay with it. And you find it happens. And because I've done that so many times, and because I understand that's the nature of the mind, sometimes I am tired, sometimes, you know, you are cold, sometimes, you know, you are feeling unpleasant. It doesn't matter, I stay with it. I sit down in the unpleasantness. I just remain in the imperfection. I stay with things which I don't like. But I have this no desire. And when I stay there, this is good enough. I'm content with this imperfection, with this tiredness, with this even pain. I'm just content with this. And I really am content. No desire, no desire, no desire. That very unpleasant stone bench just turns into something really, really comfortable and warm. And this is actually what happens. You turn economy class to business class to first class seats. This is what happens in meditation by practicing the no desire method. And it also means that, you know, other times during the day, especially when, you know, you're meditating a lot, you may have the problem with boredom. During the rest of the time we can work and just talk to people and have fun and games together. And sometimes that when, you know, you're doing that and doing all the work, you think, I can't wait till I get on retreat. And when you're on retreat, you know, the rains retreat, you think, oh, I can't wait to do something again. And it's all the case, and it's just, what are you doing? Come on. It's always wanting something else, isn't it? When you're busy, you want to be still. When you're still, you want to be busy. And it's that sort of force of the mind which keeps you running around, getting nowhere. So if you are bored, you're sitting there, and it's just another meditation to do, just how many more weeks and months have I got to do of this? Be careful there. And just appreciate what you have. And learn how to have this wonderful bit of no desire, no desire, no desire, no desire, no desire. And then your boredom, which is an ill will, a state of ill will towards this present moment, will just disappear. This is good enough. This is, actually you start off with good enough and it soon becomes beautiful. So I don't desire to be anywhere else. I don't desire to get anywhere else. I don't desire for this dull, crappy feeling in my mind to be any different. So when you have an idea like that, there's no desire, the dull, crappy, boring feeling actually does change. It becomes beautiful and peaceful. You're learning the Dhamma, and you're practicing the Dhamma, and you're being someone who is very rare in this world. Because most people, if then they feel dull and bored, they just go and turn on the TV, or they get on the internet, or they go to the coffee shop, they meet their friends, and they just try to escape from this existential pain of life just with the sense desires. But you've got this other way of doing things. You know, you can take this mind state, this dullness, this boredom, this yuckiness, and you can just stay with it and have no desire. And you completely transform it into something amazingly beautiful. And then you realize just what boredom is and what the yucky state truly is and what the escape from it is. And when you start doing things like this, you become a very powerful monk. A powerful monk because, you know, you're not under the control of the negative states of mind. You're not under the control of the ill will and the boredom. You're someone who can actually just be at peace wherever you are, even in the states which would send other people to sort of finding distractions, going to the library, going to do some project, going to do something to get out of this existential boredom. So instead of that, you sit with it. No desire, no desire, no desire, and the whole thing changes. The other way I said to explain it is just the boredom, the dullness, the restlessness, the lack of joy is the result of bad karma. And that bad karma was wanting. And now by no desire, that's good karma. That's contentment. That's renunciation. Nekama. It's letting go. And when you do those things, that's always good karma. So when you renounce your desires and controlling and wanting to do this and wanting to do that, it's good karma. So it has to create beautiful results, good vipaka. And I really love that sort of teaching of karma and vipaka. You know, just it's your intentions, what you're doing right now, where you're coming from. If you're doing it for wanting something, it's going to cause suffering. If you do it from letting go, renouncing, just no desire, then it has to have beautiful effects afterwards, and it's actually very quick if you do it properly. So when you're sitting there, when you're laying there, when you're walking, and it's been many, many hours, and it's still a long time before you can have your cup of tea, or you're going to do something else, have your shower, if you do get into that dull, boring state, that negative state, try just sitting there and saying, no desire, no desire, no desire. And have enough mindfulness, which I think you should all have by now, to see those desires. And you just stomp on them. Desires are very easy to stop when you can see them arising at the very beginning and you just renounce them. However, if those desires really get into you and you follow them, they become so strong it's just really difficult to resist them. If you start thinking about the piece of chocolate, a piece of chocolate, I could really do with some chocolate right now. And you start visualizing it and almost tasting it, and just when it becomes a strong desire, it's very hard to stop. But if you can catch it earlier, then it's very easy to stop. It's similarly like a train which is running down the road, you can't stop it. If you put sort of the brakes on, it takes 500 meters sometimes, these big road trains in Australia. Put the brakes on, it takes half a kilometer before they come to a stop. However, a bicycle is not going so fast, or even a road train, if it's just starting out, you can put the brakes on, it starts very quickly, if you can catch it early. Or, a real train, choo-choo train, leaving the station, you can stop that very easily if you catch it early. And that's like these desires, these outflowings of the mind, if you can catch it early, you can stop it, and it doesn't go anywhere. So with that mindfulness of no desire, no desire, no desire, you're on the lookout for these outflowings of the mind, taking you out from this moment, even though you have some justification for wanting to get somewhere else, because it's dull, it's boring, it's negative, it's hard to endure. But if you can catch it early with that degree of mindfulness, you can catch it, no desire, you can stop it, and you just don't go anywhere. It's like you have this guard on your mind. And all the guard is doing, it's not controlling, it's just stopping things. That's one of the teachings. The right effort is not the effort to want something to get somewhere, it's the effort to stop, it's the effort to protect. It's the effort to let go, which does require effort. It's a strange type of effort. It's not the effort which many people can recognize as deserving the name effort. But there it is. The effort just to stop yourself or stop the craving by practicing this no desire. And if you can manage that by catching it early, you'll find that the mind, these desires, they will keep on trying to escape, just keep on trying to sort of take you along with them. But every time they try and move out, you capture them, you stop them, they try again, you stop them again, they try again, you stop them again. After a while, they give up. Like every other conditioned reaction of the mind, by renouncing them, by saying no to them, they get weaker and weaker and weaker. And so the practice of no desire gets easier and easier and easier. And of course, the mindfulness gets stronger, the more still you are, the more piti, sukha, and joy you have. And because the mindfulness is stronger and the desires get weaker, it becomes just so easy. You're sitting there and a desire sort of tries to sneak out and take you with it, stop it straight away. It's so easy to do things. It's like noticing Mara. As soon as you notice Mara, Mara is defeated. So as soon as you notice the desire is defeated. At that particular stage, which means you just sit here, you don't go anywhere. Remember, it's the desires which take the mind out of this moment, which take it out into doing something, which stops stillness happens. It's the desires which cause the agitation of the mind. So by practicing no desire, no desire, no desire, and getting that, you know, as a conditioned response in the mind, stillness comes very quickly. And with it, great joy. You can enjoy this moment when you're not wanting anything else. And enjoyment just arises. And then you find a way of meditating, how to meditate. And it's working. You get joy, you feel good about yourself, you feel good about the monastery, you feel good about this range retreat. You're getting joy coming up. And of course, it's this. Remember to maintain that no desire. Now, throughout the meditation, because later on when you get to any stage of meditation, you can see that even subtle desires stop you going deeper. It can destroy the piti sukha. Once the joy starts coming up, great, yeah, I want more. And then the piti sukha starts to just fade away again. You've got joy, you're having a good time, you just blow it so many times. And this is one of the problems when people get deeper in meditation. Remember what I said with the Insight Meditation Society, the more perfect it becomes, the more desires, you know, you think just a little bit more, then I'm going to get something wonderful. They get more suggestions in, or more complaints the closer you get to perfection. And that's a tendency in our minds, that when we start to get going in meditation, we start to be able to watch the breath for, you know, minutes, half an hour without missing a breath, effortlessly. We get to this, what I call the stage of the delightful or beautiful breath. This is going really well now. We're just really close to nimittas. And then you start wanting these things. Gee, if you've got the delightful breath, that's good enough. No desire. Leave it alone. Enjoy just what you have. Because if you want nimittas, you can't enjoy the delightful breath. In the same way as I began this talk, people who want more money can't enjoy the money they already have. It's not enough money. It doesn't matter, it's enough to enjoy. The delightful breath is enough to enjoy. So if you want more, you can't enjoy what you already have. And this is where the piti sukha is destroyed. So just, you've got the delightful breath. It's good enough for me. This will do for this range retreat. No desire, no desire, no desire, no desire. And then, of course, because you enjoy the delightful breath, the delight gets bigger. And because the delight gets bigger, then the nimittas come. They don't come because you want them. I don't know how many people they get to delightful breath, the mind is going, well, where's the nimitta? I want the nimitta. I can't find a nimitta. You know, do you have to get nimittas to get into jhana becomes the next question, because I can't get my nimitta. Remember, this is just you're going in the wrong direction. It's a mistake you're making. So desire, 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 the wanting, wanting, wanting. So if you get into the delightful breath, just remember, just this is good enough for me. No desire, no desire, which means you don't move. Desire is the cause for movement of the mind. Desire creates agitation. Desire is public enemy, public meditation enemy number one. Keep a lookout for it and stop it. Catch it early, and it just doesn't affect you. Keep on catching it again and again and again, and it doesn't try anymore. Keep on doing that, and then there's no more desires come up when you're watching the delightful breath. You're just watching the delightful breath. That's all you want in the whole world. I still remember one time as a kid, had an afternoon off from school. I finished all my homework at lunch hour. And I remember just going off, I forget where I went, and realizing that I had nowhere to go, nothing to achieve, all my work has been done, no duties, no jobs to be done. And it was so wonderful, a beautiful feeling from my childhood of just contentment, not wanting anything else, not wanting to be anywhere else. And that was just the little taste of what this lack of desire can actually give you. That was only a little taste, a physical taste, when I was a kid. And now you know how to strengthen and refine that no desire, that contempt. Just so happy to be where you are, no matter where that happens to be. And so you refine that in the delightful breath. Just happy to be here. Of course, the delight gets stronger and stronger and stronger. The stillness builds up when the desire is sort of restrained and renounced. And when that happens, obviously, that what happens next is the beautiful lights come up in the mind. And if you've started that meditation with no desire, no desire, no desire, it's as if that's been the inclination of the mind from the beginning, and the inclination is there in the middle, and the inclination is there towards the end. So when nimittas come up, you've just been practicing this no desire for such a long time that there's no desire when the nimittas are there either. Nimitta, it's bright nimitta, dull nimitta, it's good enough for me. It's big, small, it's really radiant, or it's not so radiant, it's blue, it's white, it's yellow. Oh, so what? Doesn't matter. Just this is good enough for me. No desire, no desire, no desire. That's been your inclination. And so you don't need to recite it. You don't need to think it. You don't need to give instructions. It's the inclination. It's what you've taken in to that stage of meditation. And because you've taken that inclination of the mind, that almost like character of the mind, into that state of meditation, then your nimitta will get very strong, very brilliant, and then you go into the jhanas. However, if you've got to nimittas through will, which you can get to nimittas through will, you've taken will to that stage, then you can't get any further, because the inclination of the mind is to do, to control, to make things happen. And that'll be just the tendency of the mind, this habit, which will just continue operating in spite of you. It means you won't be able to get any further. If you take to the nimitta stage, it's beautiful, no desire, no desire, then of course you've got this, you've come from the right place, you've been just going in the right direction, having the right equipment from the very beginning. So there it is for you towards the very end, and then you've got no obstacles to the beautiful jhanas. And it also teaches you about no desire. You don't have to be in the best monastery. You don't have to have the best body. You don't have to have even the best meditation. You don't have to have the best teacher. You don't have to have the best heart or the best cushion or the best air conditioner or the best nose if you've got hay fever. You don't have to have the best anything. It was great in the time of the Buddha, you know, to see all these amazing people getting enlightened. you know, the hunchback, Badia, you know, the prostitutes, you know, the people who were a bit dull. It was that guy who just who got enlightened because of the dirty cloth, because he was a bit dull, couldn't learn any chanting. There's all these amazing examples of people becoming enlightened in the time of the Buddha. And they weren't sort of whiz monks or whiz nuns. They weren't these like amazing characters, you know, from the time they were born. You know, they will turn out to be something special. These are just ordinary Joes and Joannas. And there they were, just because they developed this incredible contentment, this lack of desire, and get into incredible states of mind. It's because I know that, that when people come up and say, you know, is there some people who can't get into jhanas? Is there some people because of, you know, who they are, where they've grown up, or their education can't get into jhanas? They know, of course not. Everybody can, unless, you know, maybe they've killed a mother or father or something, one of those Abhapa Pugalas who've done the Antarayika Kammas. Maybe they can't. But there's none of those here. So each one of you, you can get those jhanas. You don't have to be a university graduate. You don't have to be think that all that study is going to be an obstacle to you. You don't have to be sort of old or young or middle-aged man, woman, whatever. It doesn't matter. Those things are totally irrelevant. It's just the ability to let go of desire. Just to be content. Just to make peace with the moment. And to have this inclination of the mind is to sit here patiently. And you don't have to endure for long, if you understand. Just patiently and watch the stone bench turn into the most amazing technicolor, blissful sofa, the pleasure bench of deep meditation. This is what happens. And it's a beautiful thing to know. And it means that later on, when you come out, you don't become so complaining in life. Because you realize that it's the complaining, wanting more, wanting different, wanting it this way, wanting it that way, that is the cause of so much suffering in the world. Yeah, you do your duties. When you sort of you wash the toilets, you try and make them as best you can, but you never make them perfectly clean. You do the best you can. You sweep the path, and you don't do like what I used to do when I was a stupid monk. You sweep the path, and you turn around, and the leaf has fallen down. You have to sweep that up as well. It's good enough. You've got most of the leaves out of the way. That's good enough. You don't have to be this person who cleans up your heart until it's absolutely spotless before you can meditate. Your heart's clean enough. Just meditate now. Clean up your mind rather than your heart. And getting all these projects, I remember this one monk who, his robe and his bowl stand and everything which he had, for his, we call that the Borikan from the Parikara, his requisites were just the most amazing requisites, but his mind was a mess. I'd rather have a person with messy requisites than a beautiful mind. So they don't worry about these external things so much. They're good enough. I've got to be careful here because our forest tradition, you know, sort of says we should be very, very careful about our requisites and careful about our dwellings. Yeah, yeah, you should do that. That's your duty. But don't sort of, you know, become obsessive about this, because that is just creating more desire, more craving. And it's the desire which stops one being still. And try every now and again to have this no desire, no desire, no desire, no desire. Especially in those hours of the days in this part of the retreat. Because the meditation hasn't taken off yet. Just this boredom and this restlessness can very easily take you off into looking for ways to occupy yourself. And to escape into sensory activities. Whether it's reading a book. Whether it's just going for a walk for no particular reason, just so you're bored out of your skull. Or sleeping a lot, or fantasizing. All those escapes is all doing something. Instead of that, just stand your ground, or sit your ground. And just, whatever you're experiencing, maybe dull, maybe unpleasant, just say, no desire, no desire, no desire. And continue until just the mind just becomes free. You realize the problem wasn't the sort of feeling you had. It wasn't the cold in your hut. The problem wasn't just, you know, maybe the noise of the kookaburras or whatever. The problem was just your reaction, the desire you had, the ill will, the wanting something more. And you can soon see that that's been the problem of your whole life. Always wanting something different, wanting something more. Always thinking that the pot of gold is the end of the rainbow. And you go after it and the rainbow keeps moving. The pot keeps moving. That's our life. We're promised satisfaction. We go after it. We never find it. Because it's the going after things is the problem. The desire. Looking outside of this moment, outside of where you are, thinking that happiness, fulfillment, enlightenment will be over there somewhere, rather than in here. No desire stops you moving. No desire means you're not looking outside of this moment, no matter how dull, boring, negative, yucky it is. You're not looking outside of this for enlightenment. You're looking right into this for enlightenment. For peace, for joy, for freedom, for everything. No desire stops you looking outside. This is good enough, makes you look inside. And that's a path of meditation, that's a path to freedom, that's a path of liberation. When you get the hang of that, it means you can be free anywhere, at any place. And you can rouse this beautiful piti sukha, no matter what you're up to, no matter how sick you feel, no matter how cold, no matter whatever's happening in life. Simply by saying no desire, you're stopping the enemy to joy, which is wanting something else. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. That's the title of the talk. Thank you for listening. If I wanted the monks to chant in harmony, I'd have a lot of suffering.
Sukhatikano Bhagavato Sahaja.